What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. We're coming to you from coast to coast, as always. Michael Lombardi out at his office in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. We got lots of NBA postseason talk to get to today. The countdown to the NFL draft continues, and some interesting NFL news just in general to get to off the top of the program here today as well, Michael. But first and foremost, hello, good morning. How are we doing today?
We're great. Congratulations. You didn't take the bait. You didn't think something was fishy, that maybe the Lakers weren't going to play. And it got close until Zion got hurt. You know, I thought he was going to kind of lead them to a victory. But then with the hamstring, I thought he had a stomach pull because he reached for his stomach, I thought, on that shot he made. But congratulations to you on a bet well done.
Every now and then, Michael, we don't crash and burn, but a good win there. It'll be fun
more,
to see.
More now than then, Stormy. More now than then. Don't be modest. Come on now. You're on a roll. You've been on a roll for a while here now. You know that.
Appreciate you, my friend. We have had a good couple of weeks. We'll see if we can keep that roll going. And as Michael mentioned, of course, the Lakers now getting set to face the Denver Nuggets in a best of seven coming up in the first round. But we'll talk NBA a little bit later, because we want to start off things, Michael, with a very interesting ESPN article that dropped involving somebody you know very well in Mr. Bill Belichick, hence why you're quoted in the article a number of times. And before we get your thoughts, let me lay out some of the bullet points for our audience who may not have read it just yet, because it is pretty long, written by Don Vanata, Seth Wickersham, and Jeremy Fowler. Big picture, that Belichick thought he had the job in Atlanta, was blindsided when the team went another direction, announcing Raheem Morris. A source alleged that the Patriots owner, Robert Kraft, called Arthur Blank, the owner in Atlanta, twice on the phone, warning him not to trust Bill, which was a big part of the Falcons passing on him. The Patriots do deny that conversation took place during the vetting of the process, saying Kraft advocated for Bill to get the job. But the spokesman for Kraft, Stacey James, also, when asked if Kraft ever criticized Bill in conversations with Blank, said Kraft has no recollection of that, but may have done so prior to January. So the growing bad blood that we've known for a while, getting some more pub this week, Michael, what did you make overall of the article and what came out?
Well, I mean, obviously I got a phone call from Seth who asked me a couple questions, which I was on the record, and everything I said was on the record. A lot of people were off the record in the column. But to me, I think there's two factors here in this decision. I think that clearly, from the start, Rich McKay, who is the trustee of the Arthur Blank estate, really wanted no one to come into the organization that was going to upset the structure that they had. Even though Belichick was and his people were told prior to the conversation of the interview that Rich wasn't going to be involved. But this was truly a Machiavellian opportunity for them to systematically make sure that Arthur Blank, who wanted to hire Bill, was outvoted. And I think as you read through the article, I think it frankly makes Atlanta look a little bit, not a little bit, a lot, like, what are they thinking, right? I mean, when they sit there and quoted as saying he wasn't in our top three coaches, when your general manager has won 21 games in the 3 years that he's been there, your assistant general manager presided over the drafting of Justin Fields and Mitchell Trubisky in Chicago and got fired. Like, are you really the ones who should be judging the greatest coach of all time? It's somewhat strange. And then to be boisterous about it, to stick your neck out and say, this is what we thought? Come on now. And Chris Olsen, who's clearly was the guy they're referring to in terms of he didn't want to change their contractual structure to bring more players in to work out in the offseason. I mean, this is just typical what the NFL is. And my phone lit up this morning early, so I knew the column was out. And a lot of people's reaction is, that's why Atlanta never wins. I mean, they're behaving and acting and being quoted as if they won five Super Bowls, and they're treating a coach who has eight Super Bowl rings as if he's lost it. Why don't they ask Matt Rhule if he's lost it? If you have a phone conversation with the man, you actually think you're smarter than him? And at the end of the day, Stormy, for me, like, really, Fontenot and Pace are going to judge Belichick? I mean, that's how you're going to handle this? Like, that's really should have been in the article. I mean, this was clearly Rich McKay wanted Raheem Morris from the start. Rich McKay's son will eventually come work for the Falcons. This was all done internally, and it was planned. And once they got blank, convinced it wasn't the right thing to do, off to the races they went.
Well, and it's funny, too, when you talk about the Falcons and winning, who'd they lose their most recent Super Bowl to again? Okay, yeah, let's just like make sure that we throw that into the conversation as well, Michael. But you said it. Bill didn't even, according to the article, finish in anyone's top three when Blank and his, quote, top lieutenants voted on the team's next coach, ranking each of the candidates. They were even like quotes of saying like he was essentially voted off of the island. And what I liked about like what your perspective was when they put your quotes into it, because again, there were a lot of unnamed sources in this one. So I like that you were putting your name out in front of it. You said where Belichick not getting fair enough evaluation is if you have a good way of doing something, he's one of the best all-time listeners. He's open to change. It just has to be smart change. And Bill repeatedly, according to the article and things that we had heard throughout that hiring process in Atlanta, was talking to Blank about how he was willing to work with Terry Fontenot. He was even willing to work with Rich McKay. He was willing to give up a lot of the personnel and decision-making things and other roles that he had previously held in New England because he just wanted to be a coach.
Yeah, and yet, you know, they think the game has passed them by. I mean, it's really kind of comical. It really is kind of comical. You know, that you think they've won three Super Bowls in their 3 years down there in Atlanta with 21 wins. I mean, and everything is Arthur Smith's fault, right? So it's just typical of the NFL. It just shows you that if you're if I'm a fan of the Falcons and I'm reading this article, whether I like Belichick or not, the lack of respect shown to him, and obviously the article goes deep into the Kraft conversation about not trusting him. That's the one that has me completely baffled. Like, I don't know what has occurred within that building for Kraft to have not trusted Bill, which is allegedly he told Arthur Blank. I find that hard to believe when he delivered six Super Bowls, when he increases the value of your franchise tremendously. You know, I have a hard time understanding that. But look, this is the NFL. Everybody wants to get credit for success, and they want to tear down the people most responsible for that success. And I think this is just going on. It's almost a Shakespearean play, you know, where everybody becomes a tragic figure within it, and they attack. And I think it's all ultimately a wonderful feeling that the former players of the Patriots are the one coming to the defense of Belichick. Like, I was going to be on the record in the column because I have nothing to hide. I watch the man work. I talk to the man. The man knows football more than anybody. I promise you, more than anybody within that organization. They're intimidated by him. He's not outdated. The fact that Terry Fontenot and Ryan Pace are judging him, I find that really hard to believe. But that's the NFL. Mm-hmm. That is why some teams win and some teams don't. That's why Bill Walsh told me in 1984, we're only competing against eight teams here.
If that warning from Kraft to Arthur Blank was true, between that and everything like with the Dynasty documentary that had come out, and it just feels like the negativity that Kraft has is pretty remarkable and a little bit insane, as you pointed out, Petty. Given the success that they had together. But you know what, Michael, on to better things. And we'll revisit this article again a little bit later on in the show. But the LA Chargers posted a video yesterday that, I mean, just their new head coach, Jim Harbaugh, seems to be living his best life, so much so that it even inspired your new article this week. But our guy, producer Elliot Bowman, put together a couple of the best of clips from the video. So let's hear that and then we'll talk a little more.
Yeah, I am. We all are. Nice. Yeah, and I'm coaching for them.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. We're in Huntington Beach at the Waterfront RV Park. This is my Quantum Thor motor coach. Kind of inspired by growing up watching the Rockford Files. Got my DVDs. I've been watching that. Nothing will make you feel more like a dad than when you figure out how to, you know, dispose of the waste. This has been a help to winning, to working, and
no question. Winning in football, is there anything like it?
It's cured more ills than penicillin.
I've watched this three times and it just gets better every time, Michael.
It's so good. I mean, look, you know, as I've known this man for a long time, and I think when you know, and I've known his love affair as I've had for the Rockford Files. And, you know, as a student at Hofstra University, you know, the Rockford Files would come on late at night. And, you know, I watched every one and I know everyone. And I know Jim Rockford was the best. That Camaro that he drove, the house in Malibu, where there's still a plaque there, Stormy. If you ever go out to Malibu and you go to where his trailer was parked, there's still a plaque there honoring James Garner, who was a huge, huge Raider fan, by the way. So, you know, he's living his best life. But what I tried to write about today was that Harbaugh's been inspired by the character Jim Rockford and James Garner, but other people in his life, too. And he spent his whole life being a head coach. Think about this. He has only been an assistant coach 2 years of his coaching career. He was with us at the Raiders as an assistant quarterback coach. That was 2 years. Never called plays, never did that. Then he went to the University of San Diego to become a head coach. And since that day, he's been a head coach ever since. And his strength and the secret sauce that makes Harbaugh so effective is his ability to take his personality, his competitive spirit, his will to win, and manifest it into the team. And the team becomes a bunch of little Jim Harbaughs, who are the most competitive people on planet Earth. And that competitiveness, to me, is what's going to drive this team above the 8.5 win total. Because we've spent the last year talking about the Chargers as underachievers. They got all this talent, but they can't win. Well, what they didn't have was toughness. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that mental fortitude they need to win close games. They've lost way too many of them. I think ultimately now this hire will. And at 8.5, I like the over here a lot. And that's what I wrote about before the draft, because he's going to make a difference.
Everywhere he has gone, that team has exceeded expectations. Yes, you mentioned that win total sitting 8.5 in the AFC West. They are the second shot behind the odds-on favorite Kansas City Chiefs at +300. And he, you speak about a bunch of little Harbaughs. Why do you think J.J. McCarthy and his former Michigan players are getting the love toward the draft that they are? We will be right back. We're just getting started here. Great day of the Lombardi Line ahead.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament, which rolls on tonight through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the code VSIN. New customers that do bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's VSIN, V-S-I-N, as your promo code only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Back here on the Lombardi Line, some great NBA action coming up tonight. The NFL draft, now just a little over a week away before we'll have round one on our television screens. And with that, Michael, we just saw the official news come across the timeline that the one and only Bill Belichick, who we led the show with talking about today, is going to be a part of ESPN's draft coverage, joining Pat McAfee. How cool is that?
Yeah, I think it's great. He's going to be in the Thunderdome.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going into the Batcave there, Stormy. There we go. And so, yeah, it'll be good. Look, I everybody critiques Belichick on his draft acumen. You know, you don't win six Super Bowls if you don't know anything about player personnel, which is a fact, and been to eight. But I think ultimately this will give people a sneak preview into how thorough of a job he does in terms of draft preparation and his knowledge of the National Football League. I thought the most ridiculous thing about that article, and not belabor the article, was that people were saying that, you know, he might be out of touch. Like, he's some guy who's been in a senior citizen's home and hasn't watched football for a while. Like, seriously, it's just ridiculous. And you're going to find it out if people that watch that show and watch our show, too, you're going to find out how much he knows about the players and how much he knows about the game.
I'm particularly excited about it, Michael, just because the Bill Belichick that we typically get as the media in those press conferences is the short answers. We're on to Cincinnati. We're on to Kansas City, right? Like, that's what we always get. And so in this setting, to get more of the guy that Matt Rhule was just quoted so much as talking about so glowingly, and the way that he was embarrassed about his own football knowledge, having Bill Belichick around, and the way that he shared information, I think that's just going to be awesome for those of us mere mortals to learn a little bit about his football brain through that process.
Yep. No question. It's going to be educational. He'll put a few of those ESPN analysts to shame, I'll say that.
Yeah, the mock draft extraordinaires.
Now, I won't mention any names, Stormy. I'm not going to mention any names. Maybe somebody who has dry cleaning in their car. I don't know who I'm talking about. You never know.
Somebody you could smell a little something that rises up, perhaps. Maybe not. We don't know. We don't know.
I don't want to go down that road.
You're my favorite, Michael. That's great. Let's continue with this draft conversation, though, as we have been diving in the last couple of days into different divisions and what each of those teams' immediate needs are and specifically what they might do with that early round or first selection for each team. And today we're going to take a look at the AFC South. Starting with the Tennessee Titans, they've got 8 picks in the 2024 draft, owning that number 7 overall selection. This is a team that finished 6-11 last season, moved on from Mike Vrabel. They have a new head coach in Brian Callahan. Rand Carthon continuing to wheel and deal, trying to overhaul this roster and turn around the team this season. As you look at their draft needs, what they should be doing with the first round, offensive line, a -350 favorite, Michael, does it feel like it has to be O-line as they continue to retool that unit with Brian Callahan's dad coaching them up?
It's that obvious, right? Everybody knows that they can't continue to go down that road. They signed Cushenberry from Denver to give them their starting center, right? You know, the right side of their line, Brush Kill was with the 49ers. He was there. He's over 30 years old. But for me, this team has to get their tackle situation handled. And they've drafted it in the third round with Pate Ferre. I think that's how you say his name. He started at left tackle, not very good. They signed Andre Dillard last year. Paid him $10 million to be the left tackle. That didn't work out. They cut him immediately. And so they're tackle poor. And whenever you're tackle poor, that's a hard thing to be, right? And so you're going to have to draft the tackle. I they've signed a lot of guys in the offseason. You know, they've added players to the roster, 3 defensively that will be starters and 3 offensively that will be starters, Pollard, Cushenberry, and, of course, Calvin Ridley. But that offensive line needs to be addressed. They traded for Leroy Watson, who was with Bill at Cleveland last year. He likes him as a potential player, but they need a starting left tackle. If they're going to find out whether Levis is good enough, they better protect him.
Joe Alt, Notre Dame, the great tackle over there, -175 favorite to be that selection at number 7. Let's go to the Indianapolis Colts here, who have 7 picks in the draft, starting at number 15. It's the first time since Andrew Luck retired in 2019 that this team is not looking for a quarterback because they have Anthony Richardson, who reportedly is looking really good right now as he comes back in his rehabilitation from ending his season early with injury. They are +110 to take a cornerback with the first selection, but nothing odds on for the Colts like we've seen with a number of other teams. So potentially more options, wide receiver +225, tight end +370. Thoughts there on the Colts' immediate needs and what they might do at 15?
Well, they signed Raquan Davis from the Miami Dolphins to be an inside defensive player. I think this team needs outside speed. They need to rush the passer. I think if they get the right rusher, if it makes it down to them, that's an easy one. They're going to pick a rusher. There's no question. They need more ability to rush from their 4-man front, which they have to do. This is a team that really has no one that they signed that will be in the starting lineup from free agency, and they had over $50 million of cap room. So this is about they signed their own players. They're trying to improve their players. They need more defensive linemen. They need a corner. I think this will be a defensive-type draft unless there's an offensive lineman that they feel like they can't pass, right? You know, because that offensive line has gone through some changes. But for me, everybody's going to want to draft a receiver. They really like Josh Downs. They paid Michael Pittman. Alex Pierce started to play really well for them last year. They've got 2 good running backs on the team. Well, Jonathan Taylor, they lost Zach Moss. So, you know, Taylor's going to get the bulk of the carries. But this is a defensive line draft to me. They've got to hit there. And if they don't hit there, take a corner.
D-line 7-1 for the Indianapolis Colts to take. Again, the favorite is corner at +110. The Colts are +340 in the division. The Titans are the longest shot at 10-1. And then we have the Jacksonville Jaguars at +240, the second shortest shot in the division, a team that was the odds-on favorite to win it last year before the Texans went on the run that they did. Trevor Lawrence with an up-and-down season, dealt with injuries. The Jags are starting at number 17 overall. They did address a number of needs on the offensive line and defensive line in free agency, but were unable to re-sign Calvin Ridley. Corner is the odds-on favorite for the position of first drafted player at -185, yep. And wide receivers right there at +200.
Well, I think corner certainly looks like it could be something that they would do. They signed Ronald Darby in the free agency, but I don't consider him a starter. Tyson Campbell, when he was injured last year, it affected their team. They need to improve in that area. I see them taking a corner. I also see them taking a defensive tackle, right? I know they signed Armstead. I know they've got Hamilton inside to play there, but they need that, right? They need another tackle. They need a big year out of Trayvon Walker. That's going to be the key. Trayvon Walker's got to play well for them. He's got to give them that pass rush to go alongside of Josh Allen. But that's, to me, is the area, right? They've signed a lot of money in free agency, right? They've got Kirkin. They paid Zay Jones. They got Gabe Davis. They signed Duvernay. There's four receivers. They also have Evan Engram, who they want to get the football to. I look for this to be a defensive lineman or a corner, Stormy.
Yeah, the D-line position, that is a 10-1 if you think you can get some value there. Corner, again, minus 185, and you listed out what they currently have in that room. Certainly doesn't feel like enough given the quarterback talent that is in the AFC. And then last one here, it's the Houston Texans world, Michael, and we just seem to be living in it with the way that this team has been built up. They're the favorite to repeat now in the AFC South at plus 110, win total over under 9.5. And if you look at their odds for first player drafted, it's all over the board. It kind of seems like they can do what they want. So what should they want at that spot?
I think they're looking corner-wise. I know they signed Jeff Okuda, the high draft pick of Detroit that really hasn't materialized. They've signed a lot of backup players. I would be shocked if they didn't try to trade up to get another corner to go alongside of Derek Stingley. Mm. I think that would be something. Now, look, they play a lot of zone. The system that they run is the 49ers system. So if they could get another defensive lineman, although they've signed, of all the players they've signed this year, and they've signed a multitude, 14, six of them are in the defensive front, which shows you where they put their emphasis. Could they use another offensive lineman? Absolutely. But for me, I think this is about trying to find a corner or trying to find another defensive player that could really help their team, because they're pretty well set. I mean, everything else is going to be backup. That's why I think they have so many picks, most of them later in the draft. They're not all going to make the team. Mm. And so I look for them to try to take some of those picks to move up to get the one player that they could put in their starting lineup and say, yeah, this guy's a starter for us. Right now, Desmond King's their nickel, right? So if they made Okuda the nickel and they drafted a starting corner, you know, but then you could say, well, they got Miles Bryant. They signed C.J. Henderson. They've added depth to the team. They need that one guy.
Yeah. Currently, their first selection isn't until number 42 overall. We'll see if they do ultimately trade up. Offensive line and D-line edge, both favored at the top of the odds board for first drafted player at plus 200. Corner plus 300. Safety plus 500. And linebacker plus 650. The Texans certainly appear to be the team to beat after what they did in the massive turnaround last year under D'Amico Ryans. They had C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson at the top of the draft last year. No first-round picks as of right now. We're going to hit the break, resetting with hour two when we come back with what's on Michael's mind and some more big news of the day. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We call it the off season, but in the NFL on days like today, it feels far from off. Boy, this league is 24/7, 365 as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And as we continue hitting some of the big stories in the National Football League today, very grateful to have Albert Breer join us here on the Progressive Guest Line, senior NFL reporter, lead content strategist for the MMQB. You can also catch him on NBC Sports Boston. So very dialed in when it comes to what's going on with this Patriots and Belichick and Kraft situation, the job with the Falcons. Like, how have you unpacked the report that came out today?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I just think it's sort of a sad commentary on the league that, you know, you had seven openings, you know, obviously excluding the New England one, that were out there, the greatest coach of all time. He wants a job and he can't get one. And look, like I say that with the acknowledgement that not every job was going to be set up for him. I think it's similar to Brady 4 years ago, you know, where Brady was always going to have a narrower group of teams because you have to check a lot of boxes to be in the running for him. Same thing with Bill. You need to be in a position to win now. Geographically, it has to make sense for him, has to make sense for the staff he wants to bring. All of that makes sense. But with a guy at that level out there, the idea that he wasn't able to get a job, I always thought, was kind of more of a reflection on the state of ownership in the NFL and where owners are. And, you know, I think more than anything else, it's it speaks to what owners value right now. And, you know, I think, you know, more often than not, you're seeing owners who, you know, study this stuff in other sports and want to carry things over and have their own ideas. And they're valuing the structure of their organizations over individual people. You know, even when there's an opportunity to get somebody truly great into your organization and build around him. And I certainly think that that was the case here. You know, I think that there's concern with some people that he's going to come in and walk all over everybody, whether or not that's, you know, reality or not. There is that perception out there. You know, I think that concerns some owners. And so I think a lot of the same things are at work here, as were with, you know, maybe Jim Harbaugh not getting a job for a couple of years. And it certainly were with Mike Vrabel being on the sidelines this year as well.
Albert, can you explain why through the Dynasty documentary, which, oh, no, excuse me, the Dynasty infomercial and the, and the quotes that are attributed in this article to Kraft, the animosity towards somebody who won six Super Bowls for their franchise, went to eight, yep, and obviously increased the value of their franchise. Can you explain or get your hands around any of this?
I think, you know, I think he just really wants to get in the Hall of Fame, you know, and I think that there's some an element of legacy shopping going on, Michael. You know, I think this is based on the book by Jeff Benedict, and that was, I mean, more or less a Kraft biography. So if you read the book, you sort of knew what to expect here, that it would be really the dynasty through the eyes of the guy in charge. And, you know, I do think that there's a little insecurity there and, you know, concern that when Tom left and won a Super Bowl somewhere else, well, you know, now that leaves two people. And, you know, when you're reaching for credit, it's clear that, you know, Tom's legacy is secure and the fact that he went and won a championship somewhere else. So we've seen proof of concept there in another place. And, you know, if Bill were to go somewhere else, say Atlanta, and win big there, well, what does that leave, you know, for the guy who owns the team? And so, you know, I do think that, you know, at 82 years old, there's a desire to write your own legacy here and to make sure that your legacy is secure. And Robert Kraft's a great owner. I mean, you know, Michael, you worked for him, you know that. You know, but I do think, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, a guy is looking to really make sure that the history views him in the way that he wants to be seen. And, you know, it can be tricky with owners, you know, and if you look over the course of history, you know, what does everybody remember Eddie DeBartolo for? They don't remember him for the four championships or five championships so much as they remember him for how it ended, you know, with the riverboat thing in Louisiana. How does everybody look at Jerry Jones now? Do they remember him for the three championships or do they remember him for walking away from Jimmy Johnson? I'd say it's the latter, you know? So the legacy of an owner can be very, very difficult. I think Robert Kraft probably recognizes that as being overly aggressive in trying to make sure, you know, history again sees him the way he wants to be seen.
Michael, I'll let you reflect on that.
Well, I mean, I think to me, and I've said this many times, Robert Kraft belongs in the Hall of Fame for hiring Belichick. Eddie DeBartolo got in the Hall of Fame for hiring Bill Walsh and building his organization into an incredible culture. But I think when you are overtly trying to get in the Hall of Fame, when you're publishing books that are autobiography that you've commissioned and you're doing an infomercial, then all of a sudden you're trying to get credit when you should just sit back and accept the credit for making a great decision, a bold decision. Because the back page of the New York Post, the day that he hired Belichick was by Ian O'Connor, this was going to be a disaster. And yet it proved to win six Super Bowls and go to eight titles. So that's really all you need to say. Now, if you want to get credit for the minutia of what actually transpired through the organization, that's something I never witnessed. So I think to me, anytime you try to overtly pat yourself on the back with a long arm, it makes you look shallow. It makes you look insecure. And I think DeBartolo just stood behind it and allowed his decision to speak for itself, which is what I don't think Kraft's doing.
And I think that's hard. And Stormy, I just to piggyback on what Michael's saying, I'd agree. You know, I think his resume is good enough to get in the Hall of Fame based on what he's done in setting up the organization, hiring Bill, in contributing to the league the way that he's contributed from a broadcast perspective and all of that. This just sort of comes across as insecurity to me, you know, in that like he, I don't think people react well to these sorts of things where they feel like you're overtly going and looking for credit. And I mean, look, like that contributor category is tough because you're dealing with some, I'd say it's like a little bit more vague than with, you know, the player category. And so do you put him in now over a guy like Mike Shanahan, who half the league is running his offense? He won two Super Bowls. I don't know, you know, but, you know, if you're dealing with a category where things are a little vague, you can certainly see where a voter might be turned off by something like this and winds up going the other way on him.
Yeah, that insecurity and animosity with somebody that you had so much success with certainly feels a little bit odd. Albert Breer, MMQB, joining us here on the Lombardi Line on the Progressive Guest Line. You wrote a lot this week about the state of the Washington Commanders, and they today are hosting a whole bunch of quarterbacks, the four big ones outside of Caleb Williams and J.J. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and Michael Penix Jr. What should we, from the outside looking in, take away from that process?
Well, I mean, this is the way Adam Peters learned to do it in San Francisco. This is the way that they've done it there for years, where they bring in large groups of people. I think the Niners might actually be doing that today, doing the same thing today to much less fanfare, of course. The number I had heard was 22 of the 30 visitors are coming in today. I think it's an efficient way to use your time as they see it. They obviously are trying to set up a new program and they're through their off-season program with Dan Quinn leading that. You know, they're in draft meetings and obviously this is a very, very important draft for them. Oh, I also think, and I defer to Michael on this one, but I think it does allow you to see the four quarterbacks in a more natural environment and how they interact with their peers. Maybe one of them or two of them take a leadership role in some of the things that are going on. You get to see them in a little bit of a competitive environment with some stress on them. And, you know, I think from that perspective, it makes sense. Now, what you lose, I think, is the individual time. But I know the Commanders feel like through, you know, the combine, pro days, private workouts, the Zoom calls they're allowed to do, they've had a lot of one-on-one time with Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy and Drake May and Michael Penix. And they will have, and they did have some individual time with those guys this morning where they could cross some T's and dot some I's. And getting to do it at the end of the process, too, I think is an important piece of it, too. Today is the last day that you're allowed to have guys in on 30 visits. So, you know, ostensibly that would allow for you to have the most information when you're getting the last chance to see those guys face to face.
Real quickly, Albert, I agree. It is the best way to do it. Real quickly, though, four quarterbacks or five in the first round, in your opinion?
I don't think Bo Nix goes in the first round. I think Michael Penix's stock is a little volatile. I hate the term. I hate the term rising up draft boards. I think it's normally a load of crap. I think it's just all of us on the outside, the media, as we gather information and talk to more people, catching up to what the league thinks about people. But I do think to some degree it might exist a little bit with Michael Penix. The sense I get, Michael, is that the coaches like Michael Penix a little more than the scouts do. And there are reasons for that. I think part of it is that he's really good in areas you can't coach. And coaches feel like you can kind of fill in the blanks with the rest. Great deep ball accuracy, anticipates. You see some things that you really like that maybe are more a little more intuitive. Coaches feel like they can work with the rest. So I could see him going 13 to the Raiders. I could see him going 16 to the Seahawks. I could see him maybe going somewhere in the second round if he doesn't wind up in one of those two places. So I think his stock is a little volatile. I think there is a possibility he goes in the top half of the first round. I think there's also a possibility he slides to the top of the second.
Albert, you're awesome. Thank you so much for the time today.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So, listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN. When you do, new customers who bet $5 get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's VSIN, V-S-I-N, as your promo code only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
Boy, does that open get me going as we welcome you into a Why Not Wednesday to round out today's edition of the Lombardi Line. Michael, we got some good stuff for you. And because we're coming off NBA conversation.
I'm listening to you guys gang up on me in the break. I saw it, yes.
I don't know what you're talking about. I just have some questions. But that one's a little lower down the list. We'll get to it in number three or four. We're going to start in the NBA because the Lakers yesterday, in their win, cemented their spot in the first round of the playoffs against the Denver Nuggets, a team that swept them, of course, in the Western Conference Finals a year ago. They've taken some money, Michael, already here early, down from plus 350 to plus 250. But is it the right side? Can the Lakers get some redemption in their first round series with the defending champs? Plus 250, could you say why not?
Oh, say why not to defeat them. No, you can't get me to say why not. I'm just not going to go there. I'm leaning more towards they won't get swept than I would be them winning. So you're not getting me on the why not on that. To me, seven-game series always come down to the best team. You can certainly pull upsets, but the best team, the ones that execute and play well and are able to sustain their ability, which I don't think the Lakers can. I mean, look, they struggled on the road last night with the Pelicans, a team that they ultimately dominated most of the season. And if Zion doesn't get hurt, I'm not sure they win that game. Now, it probably was going that direction, but Zion was playing at a high, high level. They had just no size. So I can't go there, Stormy. I'm sorry.
All right, I gotta ask the question though, and it was one of the closer sweeps. That's such a lame thing to say. The games were close. They got good. They started to figure things out a little bit with Rui Hachimura, right? I don't know. We'll see. I'm not putting my money on it, so I'm with you though. I can't say why not, but I think it's a fun discussion. Maybe they can be live a little bit. Can Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy be live at 3? There's been a lot of talk about the Vikings being the team to trade up, take him at 4, him being that fourth quarterback off the board. But could he leapfrog and go to New England at plus 205?
Yeah, you could get me to why not that one. Because, again, I don't know if anybody has the answer and the perfect way to handicap or evaluate the quarterback. I think everybody's list is different. And I think you've got to take that into account. I don't think you can use last year's data. You know how I feel about last year's data,
yeah,
or any data that involves change. It's irrelevant. It's a completely different year. So I think you have to take that. It would not surprise me. Would I do it? No. But I wouldn't have picked Anthony Richardson the third pick of the draft. I didn't think his college tape was good enough. Now, he had incredible size, he had incredible athleticism, and you were betting on the come. No question. I got that. But the third pick in the draft. Yeah. The third pick in the draft. But I guess you're so desperate for a quarterback, logic gets thrown out of the window. We'll see if it works out for the Colts. But I can't say that you couldn't pick him, because I think ultimately every team's going to be different.
Sure. And there are a lot of questions in the top five, not only about who will be picked, but quite frankly, who's doing the picking at those selections? Like, will the Cardinals trade out? Will the Chargers trade out? We don't know. An interesting prop, though, for Joe Alt, who is considered the best offensive tackle, best offensive lineman in this draft coming out of Notre Dame. Could he go top five? Like, I'm thinking if the Chargers keep that number five selection, they go offensive line, it's plus 450 for Alt to be a top five selection. Could you say why not to that?
You know, I could, because I think if they can't move, they're going to take an offensive lineman. And Alt makes sense for them, right? And so he's big, he's tough, he's physical, he played in a good conference, he's played against Michigan. You know, Jim knows him, recruited him. So I could see that. Now, I think you've got to decide, is the Oregon State Fiaga, is he as good or better? Could he be the first? A lot of people think he might be the first tackle taken. Is Latham going to be the first tackle taken? There's a bunch of tackles that are really good. I think Alt's the best of them. So I would go with that. I would say why not?
So we don't have a consensus. Joe Alt seems to be the top of that list, but it's not consensus best offensive line. Same thing for best defensive player. Dallas Turner is a minus 135 favorite to be the first defensive player selected, but it's not consensus that he is the end-all, be-all top defensive prospect. Could you say why not to UCLA edge rusher Leatu Latu as the first defensive player selected, plus 450 the price?
Leatu Latu, I could definitely say why not.
I meant plus 280.
I'm
we have
sorry.
The wrong
Go
thing. I read the screen. It says plus 450, but it's plus 280. Plus 280.
Okay. I'd still do it at plus 280. I think it's a good number. Look, this is really going to come down to, if you don't win this bet, it's going to be because of his neck surgery and the fusion. That sometimes teams can't, you know, it's not good. Teams worry about longevity of the player. Understandable. But in terms of who's the better player, I think this kid is really, really good. He speed rushes to power. He's athletic. He's got instincts all over the field. He's one of my favorite players in the draft. I definitely see him as a top 10 player, assuming he gets past the physical, the medical.
Questions about the medical. Another theme for Michael Penix Jr. in this year's draft. And you already know that I placed a bet on him this week to be a first round pick. I'll take you one further. Could you say why not to the Las Vegas Raiders taking Michael Penix plus 260?
I could say why not to that. Definitely. I see that. That's what I see him doing. You know, because look, the Raiders are probably, would they do it at their first pick? I don't know. Could they trade back into the first round? Yeah, I could see that. I think that's where the market is. And I think that's where you have to be very careful about thinking it's only going to be four quarterbacks. I think there's no question that, you know, we're going to, that McCarthy, May, Williams, and Daniels are going to go in the first round. Now it comes down to which team that didn't get a quarterback is willing to come back in. Today we saw the Giants bring Bo Nix in, and they have Spencer Rattler. Spencer Rattler's a popular guy around the league. Everybody loves the way he plays. If he was 6'2", he'd be a first rounder. If he were 6'2", he'd be a first rounder. A lot of teams like him. So for me, I could see them jumping back into the first just to make sure. Because here's what you don't want to do. You don't want to go to bed Thursday night and you absolutely, say you're the Denver Broncos and you absolutely need a quarterback. And now you're competing with four teams to get the 33rd pick. That's hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so while we're on quarterbacks, Michael, like I said, I have Michael Penix Jr. Mm-hmm. going in the first round. I personally, as much as I like Bo Nix as a person, do not view him as a first-round selection. I think a team would be reaching should they go get him. But you said, right. So this is what everybody's been waiting for, what we were talking about in the commercial break. You said you learned something new about Bo Nix and the people that you have been talking to. So tell us what you can share. And if you think Bo Nix, you could say why not to him being a first-round pick at plus 160.
Well, again, he falls in that category. I wouldn't pick him in the first round, but I think certain teams see him very athletic, very coachable, great person. You know, I know Mike Pritchard thought he was yesterday when we had Mike on for the first time in a long time, Mike thought he was an entitled kid. Yeah, I made some calls yesterday. I don't see that. You know, people don't see that. And so I think his work ethic, he's a little bit, let's call him J.J. McCarthy light.
Okay.
He's got all the characteristics of what McCarthy does, but maybe not to the level that McCarthy did it winning a national championship. But look, there's a lot of love for the player, And I think to me, you can't predict where this is going to go in terms of the first round. So, you know, could he go at 33? Yeah. I mean, I think what Harry said on his pod just in the last block about him going over 35. Absolutely. I like that a lot in the first round. That would not shock me. Would I do it? No. But again, we can't judge these picks until 3 years from now.
No, and that's a good point, too. We talked about it a lot yesterday and throughout the draft process. It's not what we would do. It's what we think these teams will do, what we're hearing these teams will do. So still up for debate there. One more here. Draft position prop set at 13.5 for Toledo quarterback Quinyon Mitchell. Could you say why not to him being drafted 13 or better at even money here? I personally think he goes 12 to Denver, so I like it. What do you think?
I think anytime you can get a corner as good as Mitchell that can come in and start immediately, I think he goes in the top 10. And so I'm not ruling that out. I disagree with people that think this is all going to be offensive players. I think there's too many good defensive players that you better get your hands on.
He's plus 370 to go in the top 10. I know this is a odds-on number. Minus 190 to be the first corner off the board feels like one of the safer bets in my mind in this draft. No?
No question.
Okay.
No question.
See, and that's I don't mind in the draft betting minus prices if you feel really, really confident about it. So, Michael, I might have to fire on another one. What am I going to do?
Uh-oh, there we go. Harry got you going today. There's no question about that. Harry tickled your fancy. There's no doubt.
We're on a roll. Appreciate you. We'll see you tomorrow, Michael. Everybody, enjoy your day, and good luck in the Eastern Conference play and bets tonight.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.